Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be covering season 6 of Game of Thrones, episodes 3 and 4. Episode 3, Oathbreaker, and episode 4, Book of the Stranger.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to make fun of you, but I'm failing.
Good luck.
So yeah, we've got some caveats, obviously, our usual ones, which involve there will be cursing. There will be spoilers. And we are having things to drink. What are you having to drink?
I'm having another stash tea. It's a ginger peach. It's okay.
Is it better than the super mint?
Yeah.
That's something. Maybe they do fruit teas better.
It has a little bit of matcha in it, and I can taste the earthiness, and I don't love that, but, I mean, it's fine.
I'm not a big matcha drinker. Anyway, this is a long story. But I am having something that I think is suitable for these two episodes, or at least my favorite part of these two episodes, which is a Terrapin IPA called Hopsecutioner. Because, you know, there's executions and stuff. Spoiler. The Hopsecutioner is, as you might imagine, incredibly hoppy as an ale. It is an ale, when ales also feature in this, these two episodes as well, or one of them. It is, I'm having the Sansa response to it, let's put it that way. So,
spoiler
in my drink. Sorry. Yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to finish it, but whatever. It is probably some, if you are very into hop-driven IPAs, give it a shot. It certainly makes sense with these two episodes, but what can I say? So what are our sections for season 6, episode 3, Oathbreaker?
Our sections are Night's Watch, that's a big one, Dothraki camp, or Vise Dothrak, or whatever you want to call it, King's Landing, Boat. Beyond the Wall, Braavos, Marine, and Winterfell. Wow. Do you want to start with Boat?
Yeah, Boat's super short. Boat's basically Sam and Gilly are on a boat. They're at sea in a storm. They're supposed to be heading for Old Town. Sam is being seasick. Gilly is excited to see Old Town because it's supposed to be beautiful, but Sam explains that she's not really going to Old Town. No, this whole thing has been part of his effort to get her someplace safe. He can't take her to Old Town because he can't take her to the Citadel because women aren't allowed. And so he's taking her to Hornhill, which is his family seat, and hoping that his mother and sister will be nice to her and his father won't kill her. And she's like, what happened to wherever you go, I'll go too. That's what you said. And he's like, I don't care about anyone other than you and little Sam. I want to keep you safe, and this is the way I keep you safe. And she says that she trusts him. And he's like, I kind of would like it if you fought me a little more on this, and so would I. And that's it.
Yeah, Sam, you need to communicate better.
And yeah,
I just love how he is gaslighting Gilly into thinking, yeah, no, we're both going to Old Town. We'll both be safe there. And then she's just like, okay, I can't wait to go to Old Town. And he's like, oh, you thought you were going to Old Town. Oh, no. You're going to my murderous father's house. And all the bad things I've told you about him? Yeah, be ready for that. And also, he probably won't like that you're a wildling. And also, let's be clear. She's in danger wherever she is. But I don't see why Old Town is such a bad idea for her. Like, she could stay in Old Town and you can visit her basically every day. I don't see what the problem is with that. He's just like, you can't be alone. I'm like, okay, so you're leaving her with your murderous father and your mother who might not like her? Like, well, I mean,
you can't be alone there.
I don't know what his plan is. It's stupid. I don't understand why he didn't communicate this with Gilly at all before now. It's so weird.
Don't have good answers. I do not have good answers at all. What do you want to do next? Braavos or?
Yeah, probably Braavos. Arya is fighting with the waif, like with staffs. And this is kind of all like intercut into a montage. It's her training montage, essentially. It's her Rocky training montage. And so she is fighting the waif with her staff, and she's getting better. She's at least blocking some shots, but the waif is still getting the better of her. She's playing the game of faces where they just ask you a lot of arbitrary questions about yourself or your old self. And you, if you can sneak in a lie or two, you've kind of won, kind of. And I don't know, but yeah, they always catch her in a lie.
I think part of how this training works is, like, if you're lying, you hesitate, and that's when you get hit. I think that that's part of it, is, like, that hesitation that comes after when you lie, or when you're aware that you're lying, they capitalize on that, and they actually can land the blows. That's what I'm kind of seeing.
I think they're just reading her better. Yeah, but either way, she's also doing a weird potions challenge, like in Sorcerer's Stone, the book. Like, she's figuring out what's poison and what's not. And I'm just like, Hermione looking ass, what are you doing? You get an A in chemistry, good for you. Like, I just, what is this? Why is that a challenge for her? She did not have to deal with chemicals before, unless they dissolve the bodies after they, like, deface them or whatever.
I almost got the sense that she was doing it on her own. Like, she was sneaking around trying to figure out what the poisons were.
No, but he watches her do it, so I'm not certain why. Anyway, it doesn't really matter. She gets better, and she eventually gets to the point where she beats the waif and blocks her blows and all that stuff and doesn't get knocked over. And so, great. And so Jacques Nicar is like, you're ready. And he goes up to her and he's like, all right, what's your name? If a girl says her name, then you will get your eyes back. And she says, a girl is no one. And then he's like, all right, come over here. I'm going to give you some magical drinking water. It's very 12 Dancing Princesses. But I do not know for the life of me what this fucking water does. But anyway, does it kill you? Does it give you eyesight back? I don't know. It's just magic water.
What it does is it fulfills the will of the many-faced god.
Whatever. Anyway, he gives her the water. Her eyes come back and she's like, I'm no one now. And I'm like, good for you. I guess you're not blind anymore. Great. Awesome.
Yep.
Okay. That's it.
So where do you want to go next?
Marine.
Yeah, we can do Marine.
Because Beyond the Wall is actually kind of exciting.
Well,
oh no, Dothraki. Let's do Dothraki.
God. Yeah. All right, fine. I get to do something fun in this, and this is not part of it. So the Horde is taking Daenerys to the temple and thus Dothrak. All the other, I guess it's the Dosh Kaleen. All the other Khal widows are there. There's a woman who looks a lot like the witch that killed Khal Drogo.
Mm-hmm.
She's like the leader of them. They take her clothes and jewelry. They give her a basic dress, and they explain to her that, hey, you know, you were supposed to come here directly after Khal Drogo died. You didn't. And so this meeting of the Khals will decide what your fate is, and you could actually be, you know, have something worse than hanging out here with the Dosh Kaleen. And she's like, whatever. And that's it.
Yeah, that's it. I guess I'll do Marine, and then you can do King's Landing. Then I'll do Beyond the Wall, and then you can do Night's Watch.
Okay.
I think that covers everything.
Yeah, I kind of like Beyond the Wall, but I might interrupt you a bunch on Beyond the Wall, but go ahead.
Okay. In Marine, Varys calls the murderous whore from before who killed that one guy and is working with the Sons of the Harpy, and he wants to bribe her with a chance of a new life with her son and Pentos for information. It's a very long scene. It did not need to be, but it was. Tyrion is then another long scene in Meereen where they're just sitting around talking about stuff. But at least this is more entertaining. Tyrion is talking to Missandei and Grey Worm and trying to make small talk. Then he tries to play a drinking game with them, and they do not drink. And so he's just at a loss for words for once. He also tries to quote himself. As like a wise man once said something, and he does this twice. In the next episode, he does it again. But either way, then they find out that the Sons of the Harpy are funded by the other slave cities like Volantis, Astroport, and Yunkai. They're funding, the masters are funding the Sons of the Harpy in Meereen. And Tyrion wants to gather the masters to have a chat.
Right. And
That's
Missandei
it.
is pissed because she's like, look, they need to die. It's the only language they understand. So yeah, did we skip Winterfell? Aren't we gonna do
Oh
Winterfell?
yeah, you can do Winterfell if you want. Oh
Okay.
well, do you want to wait for Winterfell or do you want to
Yeah,
do
okay,
boring
let's
stuff
wait.
first?
Let's do Winterfell because we're gonna do all the Stark, all the other Stark stuff other than Arya. Separately, I think.
Yeah, that's
So
fine.
yeah, so let's do King's Landing. And again, I'm a bit bored with all this,
I
but
didn't
whatever.
write much. I didn't write much, and I wrote down like at one point just boring High Sparrow bullshit, and
Oh
that
yeah,
was
I didn't write much about the High Sparrow at all. So, it starts with Qyburn is treating Varys's little birds, and puts them to work for him. Mountainstein comes in with Cersei and Jaime, and the little birds are a little scared. And Qyburn's like, "Oh no, he's my friend. We're all your friends. This is great." Jaime is taunting
no.
Mountainstein, which I think is hilarious.
Can
Yes.
I also add that he's giving the children candy like a pervert? It's just like, come into my windowless bed, children. Come here. Here's some candy prunes from Dorne.
Varys's relationship with these children always struck me as weird, and Qyburn's is no better. So I
It's
yeah.
probably worse.
It's probably worse because I think Qyburn has all his parts. I'm just saying. So yeah, Jaime kind of taunts Mountainstein, like, what is this? What'd you do to him? Cersei makes it clear that she wants Mountainstein to fight in a trial by combat, her trial that she's supposed to have in front of the Sept or with the High Sparrow. And so she's like, I got plans, that's gonna manage all that. Cersei also wants all of the little birds to go everywhere. She wants to gather this information from everywhere and get revenge on everybody who says anything bad about like her walk of shame or anything else. She then, they then cut to a small council meeting where the Grand Maester is rambling about Qyburn and Mountainstein and how it's all terrible. Cersei, Jaime, and Mountainstein show up for this. Olenna is there. Mace Tyrell is back. Sir Kevin is the Hand, Kevin Lannister, and he's trying to control, like, hey, you don't have a right to be here talking to Cersei, Jaime, and Mountainstein. And Jaime's like, well, I'm head of the Kingsguard. I get to be here. And they're like, well, fine, you can stay here, but we're leaving. And so everybody else is there who is there leaves because there was bitching about like Olenna being there too, but everybody leaves. Jaime, Cersei, and Mountainstein stay. Tommen goes to the High Sparrow and he's like, my mom wants to see my sister's grave. And the High Sparrow says no. And Tommen wants to assert his role, basically. And the Faith Militant kind of come to defend the High Sparrow, and the High Sparrow has them back off a little bit. They have a chat, High Sparrow and Tommen, and it goes on way too long about Cersei's love for Tommen, and it's basically the only otherworldly thing about her, otherwise she's just self-driven. And he's basically trying to give Tommen advice that I don't care about. That's
Okay.
it.
Winterfell. Ramsay meets with the Umbers, who are worried about the wildlings coming south because they are the house that's farthest north, so they would hit them first if they would be pillaging and plundering and all that stuff. Because that's the only thing they have to worry about, just wildlings, not a complete army of the dead coming, but they don't really believe in that, so who cares? So the Umbers then are like, hey, I'm not going to bow down to you or anything because clearly any loyalty to you means absolutely nothing because your father pledged loyalty to Robb Stark, called him King of the North, stabbed him in the heart. So it doesn't really matter if I kneel down and kiss your ring or any of that bullshit, like, because it's not going to stand. It doesn't mean anything. And so then he's like, well, actually, as a sign of good faith, I'm going to hand over a gift, two gifts, in fact. A woman and a boy. The woman turns out to be Asha, and we can kind of guess who the boy is. It's Rickon. And then, of course, like, Ramsay has no idea what Rickon looks like because nobody knows what anybody looks like. But the only thing signifying a Stark at this point is if they have a direwolf with them, and the direwolves are going like flies because Shaggy Dog's head has been chopped off, and you can see how much it affects Rickon. He like looks at, he can't look at the decapitated head, and Rams is like, "Well, welcome back, my lord," and
welcome
Rickon's
home.
Like,
"Whatever." Yeah, welcome home or
and so, great. That's just great, isn't it?
It's horrifying. It is horrifying.
You wanted to do Beyond the Wall?
Yeah. So Beyond the Wall, we have, it starts with a flashback, and Bran is watching a young Ned Stark, but older than he had previously been watching. Ned and Helen Reed come up to a tower, and Bran starts to recognize who the people are. The Three-Eyed Raven, you know, kind of talks him through who the others are. And so it gives us some background on this story about Ned going to find his sister. And so they see that it's Sir Arthur Dayne who's got this nickname of the Sword of the Morning. He's supposed to be this amazing fighter. And Ned had told his kids, you know, it's the best swordsman I've ever seen. He had been part of the Kingsguard for the Mad King. And Ned's kind of like, hey, look, Mad King's dead. Rhaegar is dead. Your boss is dead. You know, you need to stand down, and asks where Lyanna is. And you know, they hear some screaming coming from the tower, and Sir Arthur Dayne puts his helmet on, and he's like, now it begins. And Ned's like, no, now it ends. And so there are six people with the Ned group, and Sir Arthur I think has two others, so there are three of them. And it gets down to Sir Arthur, and you know it's him because he fights with two swords. He doesn't have a shield. He kills four of the six, and he gets Helen Reed down. He stabs him in the stomach, and he's down. So it's down to Ned versus Sir Arthur Dayne, and Bran's like, he's better than my dad. Wait a minute. You know, I always thought that he was better, that he beat Sir Arthur Dayne. You know, what's going on with this? And Three-Eyed Raven's that exactly right. And so Bran is watching this, and Ned is about, he gets disarmed. It looks like he's about to be killed, but Helen Reed stabs Sir Arthur Dayne in the back. Sir Arthur Dayne then ends up on his knees, and Ned then kills him. They hear screaming in the tower, and young Ned turns to go up to the tower, and Bran wants to follow. And Three-Eyed Raven's telling him not to. But Bran calls out to his father, and it looks like young Ned hears him and turns and is kind of looking for, you know, who said my name. But the Three-Eyed Raven's like, no, you can't stay. You can't stay here. And so they end up back in the roots of the tree. And the Three-Eyed Raven's telling him, like, if you stay too long where you don't belong, you will never return. And tells Bran he's not going to be an old man in a tree forever, but he must learn everything.
Yeah, I'd like to know the time limit on these visions. Do we need to see the entire lead up to the vision? Like, or did Bran need to, I guess, to establish where you are? But is there like a 5-minute time limit? Or like, do you just drown? Like, what's the time limit of you getting stuck in a vision or not being able to get back out? Like, I don't know what like the time limit is.
Well, it's kind of like when he was warging into summer. Like, I think there's this, like, you can go so long that you're not eating and you don't have sustenance, so it may be like just harmful to your body.
Well, yeah, but you can do it in doses like they are, and then Bran can just be like, all right, well, in 30 minutes after I've had a sandwich, I can just like go back in and see what the fuck was in the tower.
Yeah, I think the concern is it's, again, a Mirror of Erised thing, like where you can become so obsessed, you just go back and nitpick the bejesus out of stuff. It's like that Black Mirror episode where like people go back in their memories and stuff. And
yeah, but I think that in general, it just is so weird to me that it's the Three-Eyed Raven who's showing him these visions and knowing this is what he wants to see. And so he wants him to know everything or whatever. So that includes about his family. And this is part of his family. And the Three-Eyed Raven is choosing to show him these visions, but then just cutting them off the juiciest part. So it's just, well, except for the first one, you kind of got the gist, but the second one, it's like, What's in the tower? I heard a woman screaming. Is that Liana? Blah, 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 blah. And it's like, you will never know. It's like, what? You have to, you want him to know everything, and yet you keep cutting him off and then not showing it to him. It makes no sense to me why he's doing that. And I'm just, I get it. Like, it would be, okay. It would be one thing if, and I think this would be really cool if they did this with the Three-Eyed Raven, and it would make more sense if we could, like, just kind of green screen him into like season one and just like show like the first scene from Winterfell in season one, and just but with Bran like watching and then him being sucked in by his family and by everything. Obviously, like you can't like bring the actors back, well, at least not all of them. I mean, and they cannot look like that, but you can green screen him in. That'd be really cool, and just show the original thing from the pilot, have him watching from like a different Winterfell banister, and that I would understand. Like, you don't want him to drown in just the ha just watching a mundane day of at Winterfell. So the first one made sense to me, and if they did that, it would make sense to me as well. But this one, like, you're leaving him with unanswered questions where I'm just kind of like, why?
Well, right,
Why are
and
you doing
clearly,
that?
there is something in this true past that is unknown to a lot of people, and it really, it also makes you really start thinking about Helen Reed, and I feel like there's so much unknown about Helen Reed, and I know, but the books, you know that Helen Reed is someone that is friends with Ned, because their houses were close together. They had been present. The Reeds had been present at that last big banquet that Ned had held when the king came. The Reeds were there, and Bran had met the kids there. But even then, like, Jojen was kind of like hidden away. He was the sickly kid that nobody wanted you to see. But you don't know how much Mira or Jojen knew about what their dad knew, because clearly Helen Reed knows some shit about Ned. And he's kept that. He's kept that kind of secret or whatever. So you really, it makes you question all the other things about that relationship. And it's a very interesting dynamic for sure.
Well, it also caused him to question anything Ned ever told him about the old days, because he, I mean, like Bran said, oh, I've heard the story a thousand times. Like, he beat this guy, and so, and he killed this guy.
He
I've heard
did.
this story, and
He
technically
did.
he did, but it wasn't in the way that you anticipated. He had help. And I mean, it would have been nice if Ned included Helen Reed in that moment, but obviously there's a reason why he didn't tell the whole story about like the whole
Why they
Lyanna
were
thing, because
there.
it's traumatic and all that stuff. I mean, it's his sister and all that, yeah, that kind of thing. So I mean, there are definitely reasons why he didn't tell the whole story, but I don't understand why he didn't tell the part about Helen Reed helping him, but
It
whatever.
may be because Helen Reed didn't want to get a reputation as a backstabber, kind of like the Kingslayer thing. I don't know. It's an interesting question. It definitely is an interesting question. So yeah, there's a lot we don't know about the past, and I think that's probably true about every past. So let's talk about the
Night's
present.
Watch.
Night's Watch.
Davos and John are both surprised by this turn of events. John has
Well, the
just
turn of events being John being alive.
I was going to say that. And John is very just he has no idea like how to get his bearings back. Like, he has no idea how to go from, oh yeah, you're now alive, you are undead. And he is very, he's having almost like a panic attack, which don't blame him. This is a lot to take in. And Davos is trying to like help him. He's like, hey, what was the last thing that you remember? And then he's like, yeah, no, they stabbed me. Ollie stabbed me in the heart. And Davos is like, okay, I don't know how to process this at all, but you're alive now. That's great. And obviously John, his spirit is just completely broken, because he did, and he'll go into this a little bit more, especially in the next episode, but he did what he thought was right, and he got murdered for it. And he doesn't know, his faith is shaken, and what he believed in is not on firm ground. And so Melisandre comes in and says, oh yeah, you're definitely the prince who was promised. And Davos is like, I can tell Davos is thinking, well, it wasn't Stannis. Like, this could just be another hoax, but fine. Then John is questioning why he was brought back. And he's also, again, questioning all of his beliefs. And he feels like he failed because I feel like in his mind, if he didn't get everybody on side, he failed. And if nobody, if there were people, even like a couple of people, like four people who didn't believe in him enough to kill him for this, he has failed. And I mean, I don't blame you for feeling bad about that, but that doesn't mean you failed. And Davos tries to tell him, you didn't fail the wildlings. You didn't fail all of these people. So don't feel like you failed. And John's just like, well, I died. So what am I supposed to do about that?
I do want to add, there's some good lines in here. Davos tells him, you know, you need to fight as long as you can and clean up as much shit as you can. John's like, yeah, I tried that and I failed at it. And he says, great, good, go fail again.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think that we all need to hear that sometimes. So yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Then John shows the Night's Watch he's alive. Everyone's gathered in the courtyard and he comes out from his office and
Torment. Good line. Can I give the good line?
Fine.
I'm all right, fine, go ahead.
Tormund approaches him and he's like, yeah, no, everybody's saying you're some kind of god or something. And John's like, I'm not a god. And Tormund's like, yeah, no, I totally know that. I saw your pecker. No god has a pecker that small. And they just laugh about it. And then he moves on to Ed, who gives him a big hug and is glad he's alive. And he's like, are you sure that's still you in there? And those brown eyes, are you, at least they're not blue, but like, hey, are you still in there? And John's like, yeah, no, please don't burn my body yet. And Ed's like, wow, that was funny. Are you sure that's you? And so it's really cute, him being reunited with his friends who actually believe in him. Later on, John is approached by, I think it's Ed, and he's like, hey, it's time. You need to deal with the traitors now. And so he has gathered the four people who stabbed him. There were more people there, but fine.
I think the others died when the wildlings came in.
Possibly. But they're going to be hanged. And John goes up and looks them all in the eyes before they go. He goes up to each one of them asking, hey, what are your last words? One of them says, please tell my family that I died fighting the wildlings. Like, I, there's no shame in that. There is shame in the way that I'm dying. And then he goes to Alistair, and Alistair's like, I would have made the same decisions. And because I felt like I was doing what was right for the Night's Watch. And then he goes up to Ollie, and Ollie has absolutely nothing to say. And John is just heartbroken that he feels betrayed, but at the same time, he needs to. He's always a little bit too far gone for him to, obviously he's a bit too far gone to be able to convince him otherwise and other like anything else about the wildlings. And so he hangs them all and it is quite graphic. And then he turns away from them. He can't even look at Ollie's body and he turns away, walks, goes to Ed, takes off his cloak and is like, here, take it. And he's like, what am I supposed to do with this? And he's like, I don't know, wear it and burn it, whatever you want to do. You have Castle Black. My watch is ended. I'm not doing this shit anymore. Yep. So yeah, that's the episode. What were your best parts?
John obviously is the best part for me. Davos, I think, is definitely a best part for me. I actually like Gilly in this episode, which is rare, but I don't hate her, which is something. Helen Reed. I'm just so intrigued by Helen Reed in this. And obviously, anytime you see Ned is a win, so Ned. Grey Worm and Missandei, I really like, as far as you know, their counter to Tyrion being kind of a self-centered dickhead. I love just seeing Rickon again. I mean, I love Rickon. I love Arya in this episode because, you know, she's, again, getting her mojo back. I love Olenna because I love Olenna. And I like that Tommen's trying to do something. But he still seems to be floundering. So those were my best parts. What were your best parts?
John, obviously. The fight choreography and the flashbacks really good.
Yeah.
It made it exciting. The flashback in general, really. Arya getting her mojo back and seeing Rickon again, Davos. Yeah. That's
Okay.
it.
What were your worst parts?
Sam not explaining the plan. Like, what the fuck are you doing, dude? You're getting her on a boat and be like, actually, you're not going to where you think you're going. It's kind of close to kidnapping if he wasn't in love with her and they didn't have complete trust. And so it's weird. It's weird that he didn't tell her. Obviously, I shouldn't go that far, but like, still, I think it's just kind of stupid that he didn't tell her where they were going at all. And hey, this is the plan for you and the baby. I don't know why. And boring High Sparrow bullshit. I don't need another speech about the gods from this universe. I do not care. I really don't. I don't need him spouting the Seven Pointed Star, which is a made up book, at me. I do not need that. Like, I don't. And then the Umbers for being traitorous bastards handing Rickon over. I don't know why. Well, I guess I understand why they're doing, like, handing him over now, but what changed? You were housing him and feeding him and all that stuff before, and now you're just kind of like, yeah, I'm just gonna get rid of this kid. And also killing Shaggy Dog and Ramsay.
Yeah, I failed to add Ghost as a best part. So Ghost, best part, because Ghost is present when John comes back and he's like, hey, is that John? Worst parts, Alistair. And this is an interesting thing. Our primary listener noticed that the four people who get hanged, being, you know, two people, Alistair and Ollie, are representative of the stages of grief, basically. There is the bargaining, like the first guy's trying to bargain his way out of it. There is denial. There's acceptance. I'm sorry, the first one's defiance, and then, you know, then there's acceptance, and then there is whatever the fourth thing is. I've forgotten. I didn't read it. It's not my thought process, but it's kind of cool. Alistair being someone who accepts, like, this is what I did, I'd do it again, fucking kill me. But I hate him, and he is awful. Ollie, because he's defiant to the end, it's like, it's just ridiculous. Lord Umber pisses me off because, you know, the fact that they took Rickon and was basically using him as a hostage, terrible. I mean, what he says, too, he's like talking to the Karstark guy about, you know, hey, we don't like the Starks really either. He's just basically an ass. I don't like him. And that will be an interesting thing going forward too. The High Sparrow, I don't like Qyburn. Ugh, gross. Ramsay, awful. And of course, Shaggy Dog being killed is just terrible. So what grade did you give this episode?
B? I don't know. It's just,
yeah.
There's some redeeming qualities to it. I love the flashback. I love John and all that stuff, getting retribution, seeing Rickon again, all that stuff. But I mean, and Arya having her training montage moment. But I just, I don't know. It's fine. It's okay.
Yeah, it's hard. I gave it a B plus. And even at the time, I was thinking maybe this is just a B. I think I just like Starks so much. It's like, oh, we have some good Stark stuff, finally. And I do love the flashback particularly because, like I said, anytime you see Ned, it's a win. So I'm good with a B plus, but a B would be equally appropriate. So let's go on to season 6, episode 4, Book of the Stranger. What are our sections?
Our sections are Night's Watch, Dothraki, or Bias Dothrak, Marine, Pike, King's Landing, the Vale, and Winterfell. I think we should either start with Pike or the Vale. Probably the Vale.
Yeah, the Vale. Oh, God. Oh, Rob and Aaron can't shoot an arrow. And it's really just dreadful. Littlefinger shows up He has this Lannister gold underrobe when he gets out of his carriage. He gives Robin Arryn a falcon. And Robin's like, ooh, super cool, a falcon. Littlefinger lies to Lord Royce about why Sansa got married to Ramsay Bolton, and then sets up for Robin Arryn to threaten Lord Royce, because of course Lord Royce is the person who has some sense in the Vale. So Robin then, because Littlefinger is unhappy, threatens to have Lord Royce thrown through the moon door. And Littlefinger's like, well, if he'll be absolutely loyal, he can serve us in the wars to come. He then has a conversation with Robin, Littlefinger does, and says, hey, Sansa escaped. I think she's going to Castle Black. What do you think we should do? And Robin's like, oh, we should, she's my cousin, we should help. And Littlefinger's like, yep, we're joining the fray. The Vale is joining the fray. So that's it.
Right. Pike, Theon returns home and Yara is upset with him. I would like to share what Sophie said when she noticed this was Pike. She said, hi, Dad. No daddy? And so, he has no daddy anymore. He apologizes to Yara and tries to explain his reasoning. He's like, yeah, no, you have no idea what he did to me. And she's like, oh no, I know exactly what he did to you. He does. She doesn't exactly know what he did to him, but she at least knows a bit about the appendages that were sacrificed in the name of becoming Reek. And that's a very delicate way of saying his dick got chopped off. But I mean, anyway, she still just doesn't really understand the psychological torture, though, which is something that she'll never truly understand. But and he doesn't really try to let tell her because she's not going to listen to him. Yara thinks that he's trying to come back to vie for the throne, even though he didn't know that his dad was dead until he arrived on Pike. But now he does, and he says he doesn't want to be king. He wants her to be the ruler and wants to help her. So that's Pike.
That's Pike.
We can do Winterfell.
Winterfell's pretty quick. Asha is brought to Ramsay, and Ramsay's taunting her, and she's like, look, if you eat the people, then if you don't eat the people that you're flaying, I've seen worse. And so she's thinking she can seduce him, because of course this has worked before. It worked with Theon. Ramsay is trying to figure out why she kept protecting Rickon, but he already knows the answer to that. He's letting her try to seduce him. She's looking for and reaching for a knife, and he stabs her in the neck and kills
Yep.
her. Because that's it.
Yep.
Then he goes right back. Again, it's the casualness of the violence with Ramsay. He stabs her in the neck and he goes back to eating his apple.
His little snack. Okay. Marine, I guess. Tyrion and the others get ready to receive the masters for negotiations. Missandei disses Tyrion for not knowing what it's like to be an actual slave, because he was only one for what, 2 days? Like, you don't understand, dude. And the masters essentially, when they meet with them, the masters say, yeah, we just want you out of Slaver's Bay. Our system worked before you came here, and you just completely tried to ruin it. Like, just leave. And Tyrion's like, well, we're not going to stay in Slaver's Bay forever. The plan has always been to go to Westeros. So how about, but we cannot leave it the way that the way that it is. So, how about this? Instead of just trying to completely abolish slavery overnight, Meereen will stay a free city the way it is, and we will give you guys, like the other cities, 7 years to get used to the adjustment. We'll compensate the masters, all that stuff. That, in its, the main idea of it, I agree with. The actual execution of it with the 7 year plan, like what's the plan? Like there's in 7 years you're just going to have to do the same thing you would have to do like at the very like initially. Like you're trying to oh you're they're not going to just do it willingly. They're not gonna be like, well, I'll be deal with that in 7 years, and then you're going to try to change it overnight and then it won't work again.
Right. It is, as I put in all caps, totally unenforceable BS.
That's true.
obviously Missandei and Grey Worm know this as they sit there and they're getting pissed.
Yeah.
Proceed.
Some freed people talk to Tyrion and are upset that they even met with the
you
masters.
Skipped a part. You skipped a part right at the
He
end of
gives
that
them
meeting.
prostitutes.
Yeah, he gives them prostitutes, and Missandei is like, "What in the fuck are you doing?" But you know, she realizes that Tyrion is basically just one of them. Is how she sees it, and she is not happy about this. You are correct. Freed slaves come to talk to Tyrion.
And they're very upset that they even met with the masters. They basically tell Tyrion they don't trust him, but they do trust Grey Worm. And so they ask Grey Worm, hey, what's your opinion on this? And Grey Worm essentially says, as long as it's peace and a just peace, that's fine with me. And Missandei says something similar. She'll never trust the slavers, ever, and the masters and all that stuff. But she just wants there to be peace. And so then later on, Tyrion, Missandei, and Grey Worm are talking about how 7 years is so much longer for a slave than it is for a freed man, obviously. And they essentially just say, yeah, no, you're not going to be able to enforce this at all. And if another problem is, if you are going to be leaving back for Westeros, what's the timeline for you? Like, what are you going to leave in 7 years after this period of time? Because 7 years is a long time. And
right.
I don't know to be fair, like they didn't seem like they were really vying to go to Westeros anytime soon. And especially with the Navy completely obliterated, it's not going to happen. But I mean, I don't know. It's just kind of weird that they're just not, they haven't come up with an actual plan. And 7 years is way too long.
Yeah, no, it is. And like I said, totally unenforceable BS. If you're gone by then Slaver's Bay just reverts, right? And you're not really asking them to do anything in the interim. He's like, and in the meantime, you're going to do these things. And they're kind of like, sure.
I will say what he initially says to the masters is, hey, we haven't had slavery in Westeros in years, and we still are able to make money. There are other ways to make money, but he doesn't introduce any of them. He just says that it's a possibility, but he doesn't actually say, okay, let's enforce that kind of system on you instead. He doesn't try to say, okay, you can... I think also their possibilities are a bit limited given where they are. I mean, like, the desert is not a great place to grow stuff, but obviously they seem to get by, so I don't know exactly what the deal is with their infrastructure or their agriculture or whatever.
Yeah,
but
that is never really played out in any kind of detail. I mean, and honestly, if it were, we'd probably be so bored we wouldn't watch the show.
That's true. So, but I just think in general, like, it's the idea of we need to actually put a different system in place is a good idea, but what he's trying to do is just kind of like bide their time and just kind of, he's just stalling.
He's
and
kicking
he
can down the road, as a lot of rulers do. It's like, I can't figure out this complicated problem, kick the can. It's kind of like what Daenerys is like, yeah, we're gonna do this, but not worry about the consequences. He's doing the same thing but in a different way. And it's just poor all the way around.
You want to do King's Landing?
Yeah. God, King's Landing. Marjorie is brought to the High Sparrow by Septa and Ella. Marjorie is asked where she would go if she were set free, and she says her family, and the High Sparrow is like, oh, well, yeah, you know, you go to riches and stuff like that, and that's bad. You should say no. I was a rich person before. I made shoes. They were great. And then I converted because I saw that we're all people and we're all going to end up dead, essentially. And she's like, and she interrupts him and she's like, yeah, it's straight out of the Book of the Stranger, exactly the same thing, which again is their 7 point of star crap. So she is allowed to visit Loras. And it's apparent that he is kind of mentally broken. He's just like ready to do whatever needs to be done to get the hell out of there. And she's like, no, you got to stay strong. We got to, you know, keep this together. We then cut to Cersei, who is hearing the Grand Maester talking to Tommen about the High Sparrow and how bad the High Sparrow is. Cersei sends the Grand Maester away. She talks to Tommen And Tom's like, oh, we gotta be careful. We shouldn't like go straight after the High Sparrow because they might kill Marjorie. And he then says something to Cersei about, well, I know you don't like Marjorie. She's like, it doesn't matter. I respect your position. And as the queen, you know, she has to be treated better than this. He tells Cersei that he met with the High Sparrow, and that basically that, you know, look, you're going to have this trial, and it reveals the power grab that the High Sparrow is making. They then go to Olenna, and it might be a small council meeting. I didn't make a note about that. But they go to Olenna, and they realize that Marjorie is going to have to make a walk of atonement. This is Jaime and Cersei go to her. And this is not okay with Olenna. It is definitely not okay that she's going to have to make a walk of atonement. What the plan is, and basically Cersei and Jaime are like, this is what needs to happen. Kevin Lannister, your armies are here. They're big. We have the Tyrell armies come. The Lannister armies stand down. And the Tyrell armies basically maybe kill the High Sparrow. And then we get Marjorie back. And there's Greens of Castamere playing. And there's a whole lot of talk about how many people will die because there are a lot of these faith militant people out there, and they're pretty popular, and it's going to lead to a civil war. And it's like, it's be as Olenna puts it, it's better them than us. And that's her. So there we go.
Okay. Dothraki. Jorah is dragging behind, and Daria mocks him about having sex with Daenerys. You couldn't ride the dragon, and I'm just like, gross. They arrive at Vyas Dothrak. Weapons are forbidden in the city, and Jorah forces Daario to disarm, and he pulls out his one knife that has a hilt in the shape of a naked woman, and he's like, I'm very attached to this knife. And I'm like, okay, good for you. And so he forces him to disarm. Daario then sees the grayscale growing on Jorah's wrist, and he's like, hey, you know what happens, right? And then Jorah's like, yeah, I know what happens. Don't worry, I haven't touched you. And so they sneak in and run into these two guys who are about to sound the alarm but are killed. Daario runs one of them down, and Jorah is left to like fight this other guy. And Jorah at one point just throws sand at him, and I thought, pocket sand. And so, which is an inside joke with the family, don't worry about it. And then Jario just kind of comes up behind the guy and stabs him because of course, he snuck in a knife. And they have to cover their tracks now because one of the guys was stabbed. And so Dario just bashes the guy's head in. Okay. Daenerys is in her support group therapy about getting raped by Khals and how young they were, blah, blah, blah. And then she's like, I need some air, or I need some water, or something. Daenerys and another girl go for a walk and commiserate about how young they were when they were sold to the Khals. And Jorah and Daario find them. Daenerys says they can't get out of there alive. I don't know why, but okay. And because for all I know, they're just kind of like on the perimeter now. I mean, you could just run, but fine. Anyway, it's also nighttime and nobody cares where you are. So I don't
They're
know
not
why you
looking for
think you
you per
can't get
se.
out alive, but fine. Anyway, yeah, she's like, we can't leave go alive, but I need your help with something. And this is like, okay. So then later on, they're in like the big temple, whatever thing, and where she originally like ate the heart, I think. And so she comes in, the cows have gathered. I don't know why I didn't realize that there were just like several cows, but there was like a main cow guy. I don't know. I guess it makes sense for there to be multiple hordes, but we just hadn't seen them all together. Anyway, they talk, one of the guys like talks to the cow about how the dead guys were found, and it's a kind of a cause for alarm a little bit, but not that much. And then Daenerys is brought in to find out about her fate, whether or not she's just going to be with the Dosh Colleen, or if she's just, yeah, I don't know, gonna get raped or killed or whatever the fuck they're
Sold
gonna
into
do.
slavery. And they had discussed selling her to, what was it, Volantis? The guys in Volantis want, like, they've got 10,000 horses that they'd sell for her or give for her, something like
Something
that.
like that. Moro, Cal Moro, the main Cal guy, thinks Daenerys should stay with the Dash Kaleen initially. Then Daenerys tells her whole story about the last time she was there and how she's so much better than everybody else, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, yeah, no, never mind. I don't like you anymore. We're going to just rape you instead. And if there's any of you left over, we'll give you to the horses as well. And then she's just like, yeah, no, that's not gonna happen. And then it was also, I'd like to mention that the doors are locked in this place and there are fires, like little torches, like tiki burner kind of things, bonfire kind of things, like around it, around the hut temple thing. It's basically made out of straw and like just natural substances and all that stuff. So she's just like, she puts her hand on the one of the tiki burner things and just pushes it over, and the whole place starts to set on fire.
I do want to note, her speech here is actually pretty good. She's like, none of you are good enough to lead the Dothraki. You just dream too small. I dream bigger. I'm going to, you're not even good enough to serve the Khal, I guess, or the Horde. You're not good enough. You're not good enough to lead, but I am. And they're like, I'm not going to serve you. And she's like, no, you're going to die. And then she just starts knocking down all of these burning torches, and the
Yeah.
whole goes up in flames.
She shows off her party trick the one time that she can show off her party trick. Really, it's she's done this maybe what, twice, three times at this point?
Twice.
Twice, yes. Season one and now. So you're acting like this is your great superpower. When is anybody trying to set you on fire? Like you try to set yourself on fire this entire time. This has only been like used because you set yourself on fire.
Right, but what it does do is it gets rid of all opposition. So all of the leaders are gone. Who else are they going to follow? Basically, she makes herself queen of, or the Khaleesi of the whole Dothraki nation, basically.
So she
I'm not
stands
saying that's a
unburned.
good choice, but that's what she wants.
She stands unburned and naked in front of the Dothraki, and they bow down to her pussy and all that stuff. And I'm just like, okay, great. Like, I didn't need to see poor Emilia Clarke naked and her body double naked again. I didn't need to see it.
She
And
looks
I
great though.
obviously,
Points
what?
for look, she looks great. It's
No,
impressive.
it's not a question of she looks great. She's gorgeous. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, did I need to see it? Yeah, that's and they all bow down like the Lion King, and instead of like holding up a jungle cat, she's showing off her other cat. I don't know. I don't know what I was going with
Oh,
that,
that's
but I
bad.
know it's bad.
Bad.
Ignore it. Just do Night's Watch.
Oh yay, I get to do Night's Watch because this, of course, is my favorite part. And that's not surprising. So the Night's Watch, John is having a discussion, and I gotta go back to where my notes are. There they are.
John is talking with Ed.
Yeah, John's talking to Ed, and Ed picks up Longclaw and he's asking John, where are you gonna go? He's like, I'm gonna go south, I'm gonna get warm. And Ed's like, look, you know what's out there. You're leaving us alone. You cannot leave. And they hear a horn and the gates open. And you see Brienne, and you don't really see Sansa and Podrick at that point. You see three people on horseback. And they come in, Brienne and Tormund make eye contact, and Tormund's like, hey, he's already interested. But you get to see Sansa as she comes in to Castle Black, and she's looking around, and she's scared because she realizes she well, I mean, this scene is really very powerful. She finally makes eye contact with John, and both of them are so shocked. He comes down from the balcony where he is. They stare at each other for a second and they give each other a huge hug, and I cry because I really think that this reunion is just wonderful. They later, after the hugging and whatever, they're in the war commander's office, and they're talking about, food that they used to eat back at Winterfell and how they should never have left Winterfell. And Sansa, and I really love Sansa in this whole sequence. She admits, like, I was terrible to you, John, and she asks forgiveness. And she tries the ale, which is why I'm trying ale, and it is terrible. And so she asks, where will you go? Like everyone else has been asking John. He's like, not where will I go, it's where will we go? Because if I don't look after you, father's ghost will come and murder me. And Sansa's like, the only place is home. We've got to go home. And she's like, what, are we going to just walk up and say, hey, bye, Ramsay, you're out of there? And she's like, well, we need to get an army. You've got these wildlings. He's like, they're not here to fight for me. I'm tired of fighting. If I fought and lost. And part of what you see with John is this realization of all of these things he believed in, these pieces of himself that he put his fight into, have kind of worn away. He's compromised himself on so many levels that he really, this fight, he's just tired of being beaten down about the things that he believes in. And she's like, we have to take this back in order for the North to be safe. This is Sansa talking. She's like, if you won't do it, I'll do it myself. It has to be done. We then cut to Melisandre talking to Davos and talking about Jon being the prince who was promised and how she's going to serve him. And Davos is like, well, what happened with Stannis? You said Stannis was the prince who was promised. What's up with that? And she's kind of like, oh, well, the army lost in the Battle of Winterfell, and he's trying to get information about Shireen. At that point, Brienne walks up and she's like, yeah, we've met before. Because Davos is like, oh, we haven't met. And she's like, no, we've met before. I was Kingsguard's Renly Baratheon. I know who the fuck you are. And she, Davos is kind of like, oh. And she's like, yeah, and I was there when Renly was killed with blood magic. And oh, by the way, yeah, Stannis admitted it to me before I executed him. And both Melisandre and Davos are like, oh shit. We're allied now with somebody, or we want to be allies with somebody that really hates our guts. Later on, there is a meal that is in the main eating area at Castle Black. And Brienne and Sansa are kind of like, yeah, the food's kind of terrible. Tormund is making eyes at Brienne over the food, and this is just hilarious. And a letter arrives from the Boltons, and John reads it, and everything that Ramsay taunts them about in this letter is punctuated with "come and see." Have your brothers in the dungeons. Come and see.
He basically just sends them a poem, and he just is like, yeah, you like my slam poetry? And yeah. I'm expecting snaps at the end. Like, what?
Yeah, I want my bride back. And when I get her back, I'm going to let my entire army rape her. Come and see. Because John didn't want to read that part. Sansa reads it aloud. And then I'm going to have my dogs, eat Rickon to death in front of you. Come and see. And it's kind of like, and because at this up until this point, and John still really doesn't. John didn't really understand when Sansa was talking about these people are terrible and we can't have them in charge of Winterfell. And Sansa says he calls himself Warden of the North. He's killed Roose Bolton. I know, like, this is really, really bad. And she's like, I know he said he had 5,000 people. And John's like, how can we go up against an army of 5,000? Tormund says he's only got 2,000. Sansa's like, look, we have to save Winterfell and we have to save our brother. This is our mission. We've got to do it. And that is basically it. So, over here.
best parts of this episode.
I mean, obviously the reunion. Sansa for wanting to fight back and for apologizing also to Jon, because of all of the Starks to reunite, this is not the pairing anyone would have chosen, if I'm being completely honest. Literally anybody else, it would have been like, oh, wow, this really means so much. And even though, and I think that's what they're going for in a way, because I think that since Sansa and Jon didn't have that big of a relationship, they haven't seen each other in years, but they still have they have so much love for each other and so much more appreciation for them being a family now in hindsight. So I mean, it's just, it makes it that much sweeter, and I'm glad she does apologize for that, because if you think about any other combination of people, like even Bran and John, like I mean, yeah, that would have been adorable. I mean, he saw him when he was 10, helped him like learn how to shoot a bow and arrow, all that stuff. Arya and Bran, I mean, like they kind of were competitive, but like it was like the only non-established relationship in the Starks that you just like literally never saw an interaction between them, and now you just see it. And it's interesting to see. And again, like obviously like an Arya and Jon reunion would have been adorable. Like she would have shown him Needle, all that stuff. It's like, I use this a lot. And well, she's not using it a lot now. She's using a staff now, but whatever. And I mean, and a Bran and Rickon reunion, don't even get me started. But
well, any of them in Rickon, my God, that he was just a baby. But yeah, a baby. I remember speculating about, like, because this is the kind of thing, like between seasons, we'd sit around and talk about, like, who do you want? How would these two people get together, et cetera, et cetera? And you're right, Sansa and pretty much everybody, she was such a bitch to pretty much
but everybody. Even her and Arya, like, yeah, I mean, her after her hearing about how Arya is doing and her being relieved and all that stuff, and like even that would have been like a great reunion. Like, it's an established relationship, they'd been with each other the longest out of everybody, really, except for Bran and Rickon. But I mean, it just, I don't know, it would have, any of them would have been like more emotionally impactful. However, the fact that this can still be very emotionally impactful and them not have had any screen time with each other before, like, it's a testament to how much we love the Starks. Tyrion's main ideas of at least establishing a different system, but not his like whole plan, because it's stupid. Dario, I like Dario in this. He's just kicking ass, which is fun. Marjorie for staying strong, growing strong. Tormund, Podrick for being there. I'd also like to say Missandei and Grey Worm, because they at least try to tell Tyrion, hey, that's not, these people are going through a lot more than you think. So don't try to speak for them when you don't know them, even though that's exactly what Daenerys was doing, but it's fine. It's not, but like either way, I'm glad that they're at least questioning his ideas, because they are bad ideas. But I mean, again, the general idea of establishing a different system other than slavery is necessary for it to maintain the abolishment of slavery, if that's even a word. Anyway, so yeah, the fact that at least he had an idea of we need to put a new system in is more than Daenerys ever had. So I mean, good for him, I guess, but still, it's a bad idea with the whole 7 years thing.
Are those
you?
Yeah, so those are my parts. I actually love Daenerys in this. I love her speech and burning shit down. Like, I'm not saying this is a good whatever. In some ways, it is, though, because the Dothraki system is kind of terrible. The way they were treating her, it is a way out for her that moves her toward her goal. So while I don't agree with her goal, and because her goal is basically just conquering, it is not establishing something new. I don't agree with her goal, but if your goal is to conquer stuff, this is moving toward your goal, and that's what she does.
I would probably add Daenerys as well, just
Yeah,
because she does have a badass moment.
she does have badass moments in this. I think the you know those are really good. I like Dario in this, obviously. And I love his reaction too, because he's never seen her do this party trick, right? He's never seen her come out of a fire. And even though Jorah's seen it, he's like fucking impressed. So, but Dario's kind of like, wow. You know, he's just really wowed by her because this woman is, he's been having sex with. It's pretty amazing. I
She's so
love
hot.
Oh yeah. I love Yara in this too. Like, fuck it, Theon. What the fuck are you doing here? You know, I don't what you expect here, and you're not gonna screw with my bid to become the king. And I love the fact that she's just not putting up with his you know, like self-indulgent bullshit, although you know it is a lot more warranted than it was the first go around.
I agree.
So I love Grey Worm and Missandei in this. I feel like, you know, and I'm going to talk about Tyrion, but he's the worst part for me. But Missandei and Grey Worm, you know, there's one basic tenet, and this is the one basic thing that Daenerys got is that slavery's got to go, period. And that there's only one way for it to go, which is by force, because that's the only thing they understand. Now, the fact that she did not then work to establish something new before like going on and conquering something else, which is really just not the way things work, is why everything just reverted back in Astapor and Yunkai and all those kinds of things. And I want to talk about that more with Tyrion, but that basic tenet, the fact that they are not okay with it being walked back and that they speak up and speak articulately about that, I think is great. I love Lord Royce in this because, again, you've got one voice of reason in the Vale, and he's it. And the fact that he's able to get out of being thrown through the moon door is pretty darn good. I love Brienne. I think she's great. I love Tormund because I just love Tormund. Him flirting with Brienne just with his eyebrows is hilarious. My favorite part, of course, is Sansa and Jon. And you've talked about it a lot. I think one thing I would add would be that it speaks to that loving family that is the Starks, that even the kids that really didn't get along, I mean, like actively did not get along, still have this bond, and still appreciate what was established for them by having this wonderful family and this wonderful life at Winterfell, and the fact that they want to, that it is good enough that they want to fight for it and bring it back. And I especially love Sansa in this because, again, much like we've talked about with Theon, she's growing her balls finally. She's finally realized this is up to me. I can't wait to be saved by someone else. You know, John, I'd love for you to help me. I'm gonna have to fucking do this on my own, however I have to do it, but I'm gonna do it because this was something worth fighting for. I didn't appreciate it, and now I do. So I love that. What were your worst parts?
Can I also add that I like that I mentioned that Tormund was the best part for me as well. I don't think I articulated exactly why. It's not just him making eyes at Brienne for me. I love that when Jon asks how many men that he has to spare, he gives him a number without any complaint. Like he will fight with Jon, like not fight with him. He will fight alongside Jon, and because he literally died for what. To like save his people. And I do appreciate that Tormund is being a loyal friend, and I think that's great.
I think there's another facet to this with Tormund too. The way this letter from Ramsay reads, it starts out with "You let wildlings through, you're a traitor." And you've betrayed like everybody in the north, and we're all coming after you, is the way this letter reads from Ramsay. And Tormund picks up on that immediately. They're coming after me and my people too. And so I know where my loyalty lies, obviously, but I also owe it to my own people to get into this fight. So yeah, I think there that lack of hesitation is on multiple levels. I'm sorry. Your worst parts.
Worst parts, Littlefinger. He's on his shit again. I don't care. Robin, that tit sucker. Not anymore.
I forgot Robin. I forgot Robin.
The High Sparrow. I don't care. Tommen for being weak. I just like Tommen, bro. Like you actually could raise an army to do this if you wanted to. Like, you are not putting forth a lot of effort. You are not putting forth any effort. You're not raising a finger ever since, like, your mom and your wife got taken by these fanatics. You did not raise a finger to help them. And like, how is that supposed to make them feel, first of all? Second of all, you could have. You yeah. actually could have. And would you have lost men to it? Sure. There are casualties in all wars, but I think in general, like, at least it would have been taking a stand and dethroning them and not giving them more power. I mean, we haven't even gotten to the half of Tommen yet, but like, still, I'm just like, even him talking to the High Sparrow he's not even going there to be like, hey, release my wife. He's going, hey, can my mom please see my sister's grave, pretty please? And like, he's just like, yeah, no, you can't.
He's such a fucking mama's boy.
But he cares about Marjorie, which is the thing that I'm just like, okay, well, if you really care about your wife, get her out of there. Like, it's just, like, do something. Yeah. Anyway, the killing Asha, what a shame. RIP. Ramsay for killing Asha, and Tyrion's actual plan. I think that in general it's a pretty sucky plan, especially for the people in the slave cities, because it literally doesn't change anything. It's just saying, hey, you keep doing what you're doing, we're going to keep doing what we're doing to stop their funding, and that's it. We're still going to change your way of life in 7 years. At least that's the plan. It's not like we can enforce it, but that's the plan. So that won't harbor any backlash at all. Like, you're still trying to change their plan and they just want you to leave. So I'm just like, you're not giving them what they want. And so how do you think they're going to respond? Like, I don't see why he thinks this is a good idea at all. Anyway, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, my worst part is obviously I failed to write down Robin and the High Sparrow, both of which were terrible. And from all the reasons that you said, the High Sparrow and the power grabbing is just vile to me, because this is exactly what you claim to be preaching against. I hate Littlefinger. He's such a manipulative asshole, and it's so easy. Like, he preys on this. Robin is so far past being a mama's boy. It's like, Tommen's a mama's boy. Robin is a tit sucker. There's nothing else to call him. I mean, it's like, what the hell? And Littlefinger preying on him is sickening. The Dothraki, I hate in this. You know, and
oh,
they're
true.
Funny. They're funny, but I hate them. And their lifestyle is disgusting. I hate Ramsay. He's not improving. And
you thought he would improve?
The thing about Tyrion and his plan, and I agree with you, the fact that he acknowledges there needs to be a plan is a good one. I watched the post-credit stuff with the showrunners, and what they said is they modeled these speeches, because there's no source material. They modeled it on things that Lincoln did as far as trying to appease the Confederacy. And you know, some of it's like Missouri compromise language, that kind of stuff. And you know, that realization, like Tyrion still thinks he can talk his way out of stuff. He's like, we're trying diplomacy. It's like, no, 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 dude. No, this is not the way it's gonna go. And because there is no room for that concept, you do have to put something else in place, especially from an economic standpoint. But this is not okay. And I think that, you know, his appeasement of them, offering them prostitutes, are you fucking kidding me? That told me, and I'm much as it did Missandei, it's like, dude, you think that you're in some goddamn country club with, like, what's his face, Epstein, where you can just like, this is how we work deals. No, it fucking isn't. It isn't. And, you know, you're supposed to be a representative of Daenerys. Fuck you. It's terrible. I'm sorry. I thought it was terrible. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm studying reconstruction right now. It is not fucking pretty, and it will not be fucking pretty whenever you try to abolish something like slavery. And not to
True.
say that it's not worth it. It certainly is. It's just it takes years upon years to actually completely do it. You know what I mean? It and it like even though it took years for like African Americans to even like desegregate. Like it took like oh my God, it took too long. But
Way
it
too
took
long.
way too long. Like too wait, ooh, no. Decades upon decades. Like it took so long. So you thinking that, oh yeah, we're just like we're not going to enforce anything. It like that's not going to help anybody. That's not going to help the people that you've that thought that they okay. To be clear, they could have gone with Daenerys to Meereen, but then again, they probably would have been slaughtered by the Sons of the Harpy, so that wouldn't have really helped them. So honestly, they were pretty much stuck in the slave cities that she visited. And obviously, Volantis isn't one she visited, but it does exist in the same kind of universe and same kind of like economic system kind of thing. But I mean, I don't know, just. It's not gonna be pretty. It's and I think that Missandei's point last episode was it will be bloody, it will be gross, it will be awful, but it needs to happen for these people to be free. And are we willing to make that sacrifice? And clearly, and I'm surprised she hadn't mentioned that to Daenerys before. I think that it's weird that she didn't like she I feel like she thought that Daenerys was making more progress than Tyrion is. But I still think that she should have told Daenerys, "Hey, I know what you're trying to do is admirable." But when she finally made that decision to reopen the fighting pits to like really bow down to the masters in a way, I'm surprised she didn't have anything to say about it then. But I mean, again, hindsight's 2020. But I mean, it's just I think that it's odd. I'm glad she's able to express some opinions now about how. Like they have in like recognizing how they have failed in the past and how they need to actually use force now because that's the only thing they'll respond to. And again, surprised she didn't mention this to Daenerys before. Even Daenerys asked her opinion on, hey, what do I do with the masters? And she's just like, you usually have some great ideas, so how about you just decide? And then she just chose the worst possible decision and then shit went down. So
I agree with you. I think one of the things is the dynamic between Missandei and Daenerys. And again, there's zero precedent for this it being on this sophisticated a level in the books because she was 11. Missandei in the books. So it is hard to kind of go off book with that, but you get the sense that she has so much respect for Daenerys as a leader that she could just kind of defer to, oh, she's going to make the right decision because her heart's in the right place, kind of thing. She loves her on some level. And I think that that's, you know, it's that devotion. We've seen it with Jorah, we've seen it with Dario. You know, Tyrion has a little bit, but his is more sexually oriented. You know, that we've seen that kind of, oh, she's going to do the right thing because she's does the party trick or whatever, she's got magic. All of those things don't make for a good system of government, as we are exploring right now. So, what grade did you give this episode?
B plus? I don't know. I
I,
like the reunion.
yeah, I love certain things about this episode, and I initially was thinking A minus, and then I was thinking not really. So maybe B plus. Maybe the first of these two episodes really is a B, and this is a B plus. I because you know, there's a lot of really good stuff in this episode. I think my problem is I know in this season there is an episode I love more, but this could still
There are
be an
two
A.
episodes we love more, Mom. Think about it.
Fair. But
Actually, there are moments in three episodes. Sorry, go ahead.
well, there's a moment here, obviously. So
Sure.
you know, an A minus is not out of the realm here. So I
Oh, there's another episode. Sorry. I keep thinking of all these moments, and I think that's another thing that I'm going really quickly before we like wrap things up. I think the reason I like season six better than season five is because it has more of the big moments in each of the episodes. So it's dragging a little bit less for me. So you at least get like a big moment in each episode to be like a big climax for a certain storyline, or multiple climaxes and multiple storylines, or just something big happening. Like, I don't know, it's more entertaining that way.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean. I do remember, like, when I was watching this, like, the fact that Rickon appears in episode three, I'm like, damn,
I
that's
thought it was way sooner.
later. I thought it was later too. So yeah, I am kind of trying to reconfigure in my head like the timelines of things and how things are gonna happen with this. And I agree with you that there are definitely some things that are great in upcoming episodes. I'm hesitant not to give this what I'm thinking, which is this is, there's, it's a really excellent episode in my opinion. So an A minus is not out of the realm for me. So we are looking forward to sharing more of season six.
So wait, what did you choose? Are you choosing A
A
minus
minus,
or no?
yes.
Okay. You sounded like you were still deciding. I
No,
was really confused.
no, no. So we are looking forward to sharing the rest of season six with you, and we're going to keep rolling right along. We hope that you join us. And
Cheers.
here's.